Would you identify yourself, please?
Ethan Miller from the rock band Howlin' Rain.
So let's just launch right into the evil question of the band name. Now, I've talked to Graham Parker multiple times. So has he heard and reacted to the name at all?
Graham Parker?
Graham Parker's famous album was Howlin' Wind.
Oh, yeah. No, somebody brought that up the other day. No, I don't know that record, I have to say. Possibly shamefully to record collectors out there. Like, boy, there's no Graham Parker. So I'm not sure about Graham Parker. I think that the name came from, I just like to try to get a name with, just like starting out the interview evilly, it's like starting a band out, trying to just like get the name. And if you can get the right name for the band, you know, the rest of the band will like develop itself around that. You know, it worked for my other band, Comets on Fire, and I tried to find something with like, you know, kind of earthy action for this band. And I didn't even realize that there was, you know, kind of a yin and yang thing with Comets on Fire and Howlin' Rain, you know, so maybe the next one will be some earth kind of band or something like that. There was like, originally it was called the Vultures, and then like Electric Vultures, and then some of the guys were trying to get like Ethan Miller's Vultures, like tangling a little bit with like Ethan Miller and the something.
You could have been EMV.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. So none of those, I was just like, ah. And then I think actually where this came from is... John Maloney, the original drummer, and Ian were like looking through lyrics and picking out some words and stuff, and they picked out something to do with rain, and I was like, well, that could be cool if it was a little more, you know, action-packed and stuff. And I was like, it's kind of got like a nod towards the great blues man Howlin' Wolf, you know, and at the same time it's kind of like just reminds me of one of the most poignant, you know, and like resonant kinds of weather, you know, like where I grew up in northern Humboldt. It happens in the Bay Area less and less now that the earth's being destroyed. But, it's like just these like crazy dark nights, you know, where your old Victorian wooden house is just shaking because it's just like that rain's blowing sideways and stuff. And I thought, oh, that's cool. You know, I mean, that kind of like vibe, you know, maybe bring that resonance to the title of the band, you know.
I like the description on the website for Magnificent Fiend. Snarling mercurial Jaguar guitars, wailing full throttle Hammond B3 organ, and 8 new mammoth rock and roll jams. You're not looking to be mistaken as a power pop band, are you?
Yeah, no, I thought it summed it up pretty well, you know?
Yeah, and that Fender Jaguar, now that's what, a 64?
Yeah.
That's your best friend, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my best buddy. She's a good old gal. She's
seen you through at least 2 bands in a lot of years.
Yeah, I think she's been gigging for all them 40 plus years. She's pretty beat up and stuff, and pretty rusty with blood and sweat of my own and others. But I took it in and had it refretted, and once in a while it gets cleaned off a little bit. But we've been on the road so much, I don't worry about the aesthetics. I really used to thrash it about pretty bad in Comets, you know, kind of like hit the neck against the ground sometimes, or slam it into the amp or whatever, you know. And like, the good old handmade pre-CBS Fender construction takes a licking, you know, and keeps on delivering the beauty. So I don't think... I could afford to replace it.
I thought it was really intriguing. We're going to get more to the music in a second, but that you're going to be supporting the Black Crowes this fall.
Yeah, I think those would be fun. I mean, I love no stage that I played on has been too large for me to feel comfortable with kind of like, you know, really trying to kind of get it up and get it on. You know, I like those, like a stage that's got room to move around a little bit, you know, where you don't swing your guitar over your head and, you know, hit the chandelier and get it all tangled up in that thing, you know. Or like, you know, move back a step from the microphone and get a crash cymbal up your ass, you know. So it's going to be nice to like, it's going to be nice to play those big venues. I'm pretty sure that they're going to be sold out crowds for the Crowes, because I think that they chose to play smaller venues than they could probably, you know, play. And I think they did that for intimacy purposes and because it's fun to play a sold-out theater, you know, and gives their crowds more, gives them more. It's going to give us more. They're a very interesting band. You know, their history is pretty fascinating. You know, to be like such an enormous, you know, their album has to be one of like, you know, it has to be a historical album in the history of debut sellers, and to have been like one of those platinum selling bands in the 80s and have a 20-year career that's still got the most of the key groups still together doing something, where now they're almost just on a purely artistic, you know, trajectory, doing the things that they want to do, making the records that the fans most want to hear and that they most want to make, playing the gigs that they most want to make and the fans most want to see. You know, it's pretty interesting. A lot of people can do that, but, you know, their bank accounts or their managers or their record labels, you know, tell them it's not a good idea. You know, you should push it this way or that. You know, you could make so many more millions, or you could do this or that, or, you know, how can we get 13-year-olds to get into it and get it on their cell phone or something. And, you know, it's a pretty fascinating to see a band like that that's really stood the test of time that's not about those things. You know?
But the combo punch of an indie label like Birdman, but happening to be with American Recordings, and it's more than a rumor now, I know it's a fact that the next album is going to be produced by Mr. Rubin. So that must be pretty exciting, but it also must be interesting from the perspective of that he is truly a producer's producer. So when a band goes with American Recordings, you know, that's great because that's the, quote, stamp of approval that you're at a certain level of reality. So that's very cool.
You know, almost like, you know, he's heavy and you know, artistic and spiritual guidance and where those things meet, you know, kind of like these, like, the things that we've talked about so far, you know, when I talked about, you know, well, what kinds of things would you like me to do to, you know, prepare for the next record in writing? What should I think about? These kinds of, like, you know, give me some tips and stuff. And, you know, like all the best kind of teachers or people that you know, guide, you know, by a, you know, benevolent hand and stuff. You know, he'll kind of place an idea for you to, like, you know, in front of you, for you to kind of, like, latch onto and go, like, yeah, that's a good one, rather than, like, here's what you do. You know, do this and make sure you do it. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, what about this? And you're kind of like, wow, you know, I never looked at it that way. That sounds, you know, that does sound like something I think I'm going to try.
And the album cover is really clean, but that visual could be another portion of your passion for the whole sci-fi thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to say, too, that I did write some songs in early Comets on Fire days that were strictly sci-fi. You know? And I do love sci-fi and Italian horror movies and cannibal films and all that kind of stuff. So the fantastical, you know, and I love Eric Roper's artwork. His artwork is very fantastical. I think that lots of times when he paints something fantastical in his beautiful watercolors and uses his beautiful touch, you know, he often isn't like, this is a metaphor for something political or whatever. He's like, this is just a wizard with a machine gun smoking weed or whatever, you know? So like, so I do love that stuff too.
So we've invented a little thing called a musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs is the bread and then songs by anybody else you play in between. And no matter what you tell me to play, I'm under obligation to do that.
Well, let's just make it like just a classic, you know, ham sandwich with a, like, mustard, you know, and lettuce and you know, cheddar cheese. None of that bougie stuff I have on Friday night. Let's just do Dancers at the End of Time at the beginning and Riverboat at the end. Those are two pretty drastically different songs. And they're also, for all practical purposes, the first and last song. There's an intro song called Requiem before Dancers, but that's neither here nor there. And those will make a good